ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Artemis 2 is go, the first human mission to the moon in more than 50 years. And we are following every step of the journey, from lunar flyby to splashdown, in a special daily season of science fiction called Artemis Explained. Join me, Belinda Smith, for mission updates so you know what's happening and why it matters. It's Artemis Explained. Search for science fiction on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Who's running the war in Iran? We know Donald Trump is the ultimate decision maker, but who's in his ear? Today, David Smith from the United States Studies Centre at Sydney Uni on Trump's war team and whether any of them know what they're doing. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily. David, right from the start of the war, the objectives have been so unclear, haven't they? So what I want to do with you is consider who is actually running this conflict, who is making the decisions, because it is having a hugely detrimental impact around the world, including here in Australia, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And the answer to that is that the tactical decisions are being made by the United States military, but the overall strategic decisions and the policy decisions are very unclear. And they're mostly related to things that Trump has said, but Trump keeps changing the story about what the overall mission, what the overall objective even is.
Our objective is to defend the American people by eliminating imminent threats from the Iranian regime. To the great proud people of Iran, I say tonight that the hour of your freedom is at hand. When we are finished, take over your government. It will be yours to take.
Regime change was not our goal. We never said regime change, but regime change has occurred because for these terrorists to have nuclear weapons would be an intolerable threat. We're going to hit them extremely hard over the next 2 to 3 weeks. We're going to bring them back to the Stone Ages where they belong. These core strategic objectives are nearing completion.
And sometimes there are officials in the Trump administration who try to give clearer goals, but then they get undercut by things that Trump says subsequently.
All right, well, why don't we have a look at a few of these people in Trump's cabinet who would be in his ear. Why don't we start with, of course, Pete Hegseth. Now, he is known as the Secretary of War, and what, he'd be second in charge behind the commander who would be Donald Trump.
Yes, so that is where he stands in the hierarchy. I would say that he hasn't had a big input into the big policy decisions about the war. His major role has been as a kind of salesman of the war. So he has given some very aggressive press conferences. He is actively hostile towards the media, who he blames for not giving enough positive coverage about the war. And he also really engages in this very bloodthirsty rhetoric. He really seems to revel in the death and destruction and the fear that's being inflicted on Iran. He talks in quite gleeful terms about Iranian deaths and about destruction.
This was never meant to be a fair fight, and it is not a fair fight. We are punching them while they're down, which is exactly how it should be.
So he's the really sort of uncompromising, violent face of the war. And I think that part of the use of that for Trump is that Trump portrays himself as being interested in a deal. But if no deal is reached, then Pete Hegseth is very happy to keep raining down death and destruction.
Oh, my gosh, yes. It's extraordinary. I mean, he uses the word lethality, lethal. It's his favourite word. He uses that all of the time.
He does. And even before he got a role in the government, he kept talking about how the major aim of the United States military, it shouldn't be adherence to international laws. It shouldn't be constrained by what he calls stupid rules of engagement.
Yes.
It should just be maximum lethality.
So, at your direction, Mr. President, the War Department is going to fight decisively, not endless conflicts. We're going to go on offense, not just on defense. Maximum lethality, not tepid legality. Violent effect, not politically correct.
And he even wrote this book saying that there was a war on warriors imposed on the United States military to stop it from being maximally lethal.
Interesting as well that Donald Trump, he recently said that it was indeed Pete Hegseth who said to him, let's do it, let's start the war.
I called Pete, I called General Kane, I called a lot of our great people, we have great people, and I said, let's talk. We got a problem in the Middle East. We have a country known as Iran that for 47 years has been just a purveyor of terror. And Pete, I think you were the first one to speak up. And you said, let's do it because you can't.
What did you make of that?
Well, it certainly wouldn't be surprising if Pete Hegseth was the first one who said, let's do the war. Mm. This is someone who changed his own title to Secretary of War. But looking at it more strategically, he could be the person who goes under the bus if it becomes clear that things have really gone wrong. If he's the one who is blamed for starting the war in the first place. Now, that would be very unfair because in this war, all decisions come back to Trump. But just by putting it out there, he may be setting Hegseth up as the scapegoat further on down the track.
Oh, how nice of him. And David, just a reminder, before he joined the Trump administration, Pete Hegseth, he was a Fox News presenter. He was also a former soldier. And he has heavily brought religion to the Pentagon, hasn't he?
Yes, he absolutely has. So he is a member of the Communion of Reformed Evangelical Churches, which is a Calvinist sect in the United States that its leadership is all about bringing biblical law to the United States and extending Christian dominion over the world. So Pete Hegseth, for years now, has talked about the Crusades as a kind of model of defending Western civilization. Mm. He wrote a book called American Crusade, where he said you have a crusader to thank for Western civilization. So people are pretty worried looking at a war between Pete Hegseth and Iran, which looks very much like a religious war. This is a religious regime in Iran. And then on the other side, you have the Secretary of War constantly justifying the war in terms of religious language.
Almighty God, who trains our hands for war and our fingers for battle, snap the rod of the oppressor, frustrate the wicked plans and break the teeth of the ungodly. By the blast of your anger, let the evil perish. Let their bulls go down to slaughter, for their day has come.
And going to these extraordinary lengths, even in prayers, actually praying for violence, praying for overwhelming violence against the other side. Even though there is a very long history of religious language being used in war in the United States, there's a long history of chaplaincy in the Pentagon. Usually, though, in the past, when people said prayers before war, it was prayers for the protection of their own troops. Mm. And it was often prayers for a quick end to the conflict. Whereas what Pete Hegseth is doing is sort of finding the most violent passages of the Bible that he can and weaving them together into this narrative of divine punishment for America's enemies.
Last month, I meant to read a prayer, which I'm going to read today. Grant this task force clear and righteous targets for violence. Let every round find its mark against the enemies of righteousness and our great nation. Give them wisdom in every decision, endurance for the trial ahead, unbreakable unity, and overwhelming violence of action against those who deserve no mercy. Amen.
right. So, David, Pete Hegseth, he's one of Trump's men executing this war, although, as you say, maybe not too influential. Let's talk about Marco Rubio then. He's another hand-picked cabinet member, hand-picked by Donald Trump. And he is said to be a key architect of this war.
Yeah, so Marco Rubio is actually clearly quite influential in foreign policy terms. Unlike Hegseth, Rubio's fingerprints are actually all over American foreign policy at the moment, particularly in Latin America. I don't think that Trump would have been anywhere near as aggressive in Latin America without Rubio's influence. And it's been left to Rubio as well to specify the military objectives of this war. And we should also keep in mind he is a likely presidential contender in 2028. So Rubio has done a very proficient job so far, I think, of actually pushing his own agenda about quite expansive American involvement in the world while continuing to talk the language of Trump.
We are going to get to the point where our military will have achieved all of its objectives in this mission, and they're doing so with extraordinary efficiency, something that I think will go down in history as one of the best-run tactical military operations in modern times.
While talking this language of unilateral hostility, of disappointment in allies, of regarding the media as being treacherous in some way, all while pursuing what in some ways are quite traditionally hawkish foreign policy goals. That is a real belief in the power of the American military to remake the world as America would like it to be made.
Okay. Well, what about J.D. Vance? He didn't really want this war, did he, the vice president?
Well, certainly based on all of his previous comments, which there's been a lot of skepticism about what he terms forever wars, you wouldn't think that he would want this one. There's been a lot of reporting saying that J.D. Vance has been skeptical of this war. I think we can assume that the sources for that reporting are probably people within J.D. Vance's camp who they're also looking at the 2028 presidential race, and they probably want to set J.D. Vance up as the peace candidate.
Gosh. All right. Well, David, this war, the longer it goes on, of course, it is directly affecting every single one of us. So the decisions that are being made by these men, Trump's men, it matters deeply to all of us, doesn't it? So are they, tell me, actually equipped in any way to be executing and making decisions in relation to war?
I think that they were expecting another very quick success this time that just hasn't happened. And once that didn't happen, they had no plan to deal with the consequences and no concept of what the consequences were. So I would say they failed on the most basic level of planning. They were careless and reckless in their decision making, and this, you know, way too puffed up in confidence from what appeared to be previous successes.
Oh my gosh.
But certainly this is a war that affects everybody, but has been made on the basis of incredibly short-sighted and short-term decisions.
And the huge problem is that the American leaders of this war might not have a plan of how to actually get out of it, how to end it.
No, judging by Trump's comments at the moment, there is no real plan. He keeps talking about wanting to get out within the next 2 or 3 weeks, but then he makes all kinds of contradictory statements about how that's going to happen. He says that there'll be no need for boots on the ground, but then talks about the possibility of seizing Karg Island or seizing nuclear material. He talks about wanting to get a deal with the Iranians, but then saying we're not going to need a deal. He's talking about hitting their energy infrastructure. It's just a mass of contradictions, what's going on. And his supporters like to claim that this is just the way that he negotiates. He wants to keep everybody off balance all the time. But it's not just his opponents that he's putting off balance. He is putting the entire world off balance with consequences that are higher prices, lower investment, huge uncertainty and a lot of economic pain. And the Iranians, it's clear, know how to deal with this, which is they pretty much contradict or ignore everything that he says. So this tactic is not working. There is no real plan to end it. Trump has only left himself with bad options, and all we can hope for is that he chooses the least worst option.
David Smith is an associate professor at the United States Studies Centre at Sydney Uni. This episode was produced by Sydney Peed. Audio production by Sam Dunn. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Sam Hawley. I'll be heading off on a break until next week. Sydney Peed will be in the chair. Thanks for listening.